Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. My name is Justyna Paprocka. I'm professor in pediatric neurology at the Medical University in Katowice, Poland. I'm also a member of EAN Scientific Committee and Child Neurology Panel. And the month's topic is child and adolescent neurology. And in today's episode, we will talk about new horizons on treatment choices of rare disorders. My guest today needs no introduction, but I will introduce them anyway. So let's start in alphabetical order. Please welcome Professor Michelangelo Mancuso, professor in neurology from Pisa University, co-chair of the European Academy of Neurology Coordinating Panel on Rare Neurological Diseases, and also chairman of the Mitochondrial Group or RNA-NMD. Please welcome Professor Laurent Sauvin, is a professor of pediatric neuromuscular diseases at the MDUK Oxford Neuromuscular Center and invited professor of child neurology at Liège University in Belgium. Recently, Professor served as a head of the Institute of Myologist Eye Motion and the head of the Neuromuscular Center in Liège, Belgium. So we have great researchers here. And it is a fact that there is an increasing number of new therapies emerging in rare disorders. Firstly, I would like to ask you about the factors that have enabled this great development. Professor Sauvin, could you comment on that?
Well, I think that there are several factors. The first one is, of course, the preclinical science, right? And the development of new technique like gene transfer, gene editing. And not only the discovery of this new technique, but also how to apply progressively a technique that is being demonstrated to be useful in a mouse to humans, right? All this translational science. And I think it's probably one of the main reasons. Second reason is also, I think, a community. I mean, rare disease is a community in which parents are more and more informed, in which parents play an active role, not only in shaping programs, but also sometimes to kick off programs. And we have several examples nowadays of programs that are really, you know, kicked off by parents, like CTNNB1, SPG50. All these programs have been initiated by parents. There is also a global mentality that many diseases could be actually treatable if we just, you know, put the money on the table that we need for that and that we have the right ID. And also a context in researchers to understand that indeed we can go to trials with in extremely rare diseases and the paroxysm being N=1 trials that are now more and more considered. So I think it's a global context that has led to this, you know, increased in a number of trials and number of treatable conditions.
Mm-hmm. Professor Mancuso, would you like to add something?
Yes. I guess I can add one point, you know, starting from this, from the bench, moving to the bedside, we now really collaborate a lot with basic scientists, and we know much more in detail the pathomechanism behind most of the rare neurological diseases. Most of them are genetics, but not all of them are genetics. So we are now facing a real fascinating era where we have, for instance, new targeted molecular therapies that are now available because we know so well in detail all the pathomechanism of multiple rare conditions. So beyond the gene editing, the gene therapy, we do also have now better knowledge of the basic mechanism leading to the disease. And we do have a lot of, I guess we will talk about this later, a lot of examples of molecular strategies targeting specific pathomechanisms beyond gene manipulation and gene therapy. So yeah, we are facing a very fascinating era now.
Yeah, fascinating area. You're right. So, Professor Sauvin, can we talk a little bit about neuromuscular disorders and about the new advances in treatment possibilities?
Well, neuromuscular disorders is certainly one of the best examples of that. 20 years ago, you had to be crazy to go in neuromuscular disorders because there was nothing to do. And nowadays, it's just, you know, it seems that everything is possible. So the paradigm is spinal muscular atrophy. Spinal muscular atrophy is a terrible condition. It's a neuromuscular condition in which motor neurons die. So patients become more and more weak and hypotonic, proximal, but also from a respiratory perspective. And in the most severe conditions, patients die before the age of 2 years, and that's also the most frequent. And it affects one person every 10,000, so it's not that rare, right? And nowadays, we have three drugs that are approved. One is gene replacement therapy, and the two others are either antisense, either small molecules that allows the expression of another gene, or actually the production of a functional protein from another gene. And these drugs have been shown to work pretty well in patients who are symptomatic. But if you deliver these drugs at birth before the first symptoms, your patients were supposed to die or to be extremely disabled can be normal. And this is, of course, a major step forward, and it has led to the rapid implementation to newborn screening. And probably there is a learning there, that in many rare conditions, in many rare diseases, we have probably a window of opportunity in which we are the most efficient. And we need probably to think more proactively about newborn screening of rare conditions when we can see a treatment coming on. And now for patients who are born, I don't know, 10 years ago, and who are doing, better on treatment, but reach a ceiling effect, there are new options. And one of these new options is anti-myostatin, which is actually antibodies to inhibit the action of myostatin. And in spinal muscular atrophy, we have muscular atrophy, right? So if we could avoid this muscle atrophy and allow a better muscle development, we could potentially be efficient. And that's what's going on with a phase 3 trial that is shown to be to a small difference, but a statistically significant difference and a clinically significant difference between treated and untreated patients. So the future is probably combining different targets and different approach for patients who are born today, for patients who are born several years ago, but for patients who are born today, the future is early identification and treatment at birth of these patients. And this is a major learning for many other conditions.
Yes, of course. So what do you think about combined therapies regarding SMA patients?
Here also there is major learnings. I mean, of course, we can combine therapies that are approved, but if they work on the same target, it's unclear if we will be more efficient by adding things on the same target. And then comes the problem of the health economic, is that it's amazing, of course, to see a patient doing better, but what is the price for that? And I mean, it's not if we were living like in a universe where resources are, sustainable forever. We need to be conscious of that. So we need to figure out that maybe combination therapy add a little bit, which is not demonstrated yet, but it comes with a price that becomes a little bit unreasonable. So probably if it comes to combination therapies, we need to develop on other targets and not trying just to add drugs that work on the same target.
Okay. Thank you. Professor Mancuso, how this treatment development can be reflected by adult population? I mean, the burden of care, quality of life, some treatment choices.
Yeah, this is a new challenge for adult neurologists, and because until 10 years ago, 20 years ago, all these kids were dying. We were not reaching the adult phase of their life. And now not only they are surviving much more, also those patients without a specific therapy. I mean, think about the improvement of life, of quality of life of Duchenne with the steroids, etc. So we have a number of rare diseases that are now living long enough. Plus, we have dozens of rare conditions that have treatment now, and the patient will join the Neurological Institute for Adults, and they are already coming. We have this transition phase plan in the countries under development. So definitely this is another big issue from an economic point of view, and how to allocate more resource also in the adult population settings with expertise on rare disease, because we are going to have 1,000 of more patients in the next 5-10 years that will need follow-up treatments, re-up most likely, and so on. So this is something that we should start planning how to allocate resources. But it's not clear yet. I mean, at least in my experiences, we are still in the phase that we have to really harmonize the transition phase, with the neuropediatricians and the adult neurologists. It's not in place yet everywhere in Europe. In Italy, we have examples of very good examples, but we do have other regions in Italy where this transition is not in place yet. So we are still in the phase of organizing the transition, and I don't think our politicians already are really planning the future of the adult neurologists, how to organize new settings with these thousands of patients that are coming in the next years. Nice challenge.
And Professor Sever, I have to ask, what is your experience with the transition curve?
Well, my experience is that I've been working in three different European countries, in France, in Belgium, where my accent comes from, and in the UK. But the understanding of transition is very different, right? In France, it's two different hospitals, and connecting different hospitals is sometimes difficult. In the UK, we organize a consultation of transition. But in Belgium, we're very lucky because it's a single center. Adult and children, just within the same centers, it is the same healthcare practitioner, sometimes even the same doctors. Well, of course, we have adult and child neurologist background, so the child neurologist, they used to see more the kids and the adults, but I can see young adults. My adult neurologist colleagues can see, teenagers. And so the transition is a much smoother process because the patients remains within the same centers. And it's not only the doctors, because we have to think transition in terms of, the research nurse, in terms of the coordinating nurse, in terms of physiotherapist, in terms of dietitian, nutritionist, all these healthcare practitioners are key for patients. It's not only transitioning of doctors. To be honest, I love the Belgian understanding of a single center that goes from birth to death, and in which the patients is considered holistically.
I guess you also, because of the population is quite small, Lauren, right? I mean, it will be difficult to have a system like this in UK or in Italy.
True, but it. You're right, but I think it's not only that. It's that, for instance, we don't have children hospital. We have just general hospitals. It's not within, if you go to Paris, for instance, the big children hospitals are children hospitals, and that's it. And adults hospitals like La Pitié-Salpêtrière are not, pediatric hospitals. So there is really a kind of shift of between adult hospital and children hospital. I think it's more cultural, to be honest. And also, if you consider general hospitals, then people are more used to see either an adult, either a child, and they don't say, for instance, if you go with a child in La Pitié-Salpêtrière, Paris, it's like an alien. Wait, what is this little thing? It's a child.
Too small for everything. So can you tell us more about the newborn screening in SMA in Europe? How does it look like now?
Well, it looks like a growing business. We started back in 2018 in southern Belgium and Germany. So now we have 7 years of experience of newborn screening, right? And then several pilots popped up everywhere in Europe. And nowadays we can safely consider that 70-75% of the newborns in Europe are screened for spinal muscular atrophy. Interestingly, the countries in which there is still no national newborn screening are UK.
That's strange.
France, and so big countries, Ukraine screen. I mean, all newborns in Ukraine are screened, and they started in the middle of the war.
So how would you explain it? Because it's really strange.
There are two aspects. The first one is, of course, a matter of political mindset and opening too. But I think that we have a responsibility as doctors. I mean, and I'm not saying that it's our fault if there is no newborn screening in the UK, but in most of countries, newborn screening has been a down-to-up approach because there is no politician who wakes up in the morning and say, we should screen for newborns for spinal muscular atrophy today. Nobody think about it. It has to come from the doctors, from the researchers. It is our role as a community to generate the evidence, to bring the evidence, and to be a drive of that. In the countries in which it has started at first were actually investigator-initiated programs. And in Belgium, that's exactly what happened. I mean, it's not a Belgian politicians who woke up in the morning and say, well, want to screen for spinal muscular atrophy. We did it. We invited the politicians in the steering committee. And after 3 years, we could transition the pilot into an official program. And what is true for spinal muscular atrophy, again, is a major learning for future conditions. If we want to develop an understanding of rare diseases, which is not just to wait the patients to be sick and then to deliver a very expensive medication that will keep these patients alive with a severe disability and then fill the clinic of Michelangelo with new kids who were supposed to die when they were 2 years old, survive, but in a very poor conditions, it's not a sustainable model, right? To screen and to identify these patients early on to get the maximum efficacy of treatment so that these patients have the life with minimum disability and with the lowest burden on the healthcare system is definitely the best strategy. It's a major learning of SMA. We would be fool if we don't apply this learning to other rare diseases.
Yeah, I would like to add a comment here because I think another important aspect is patient engagement. You know, sometimes the power and also the emotion that our patients, the caregiver, the parents of our children are really able to change politics in few hours. Look what happened with the Barth syndrome situation in the US when there is this new elamipretide drug under development for Barth syndrome, and the power of the parents of these children with this dramatic disease facing the FDA committee, explaining what's the reason to have a new therapy, how these kids are going to die, and how they are not going to die if there is this treatment. So, you know, patient engagement from the very beginning, I think, is another way to go because they can really help us. We need to be proactive with politics. Of course, you're right, Lauren, but we must have on board the patient from the very beginning.
Yeah, that's true. So now I would like to turn to Professor Mancuso once again and to the direction of mitochondrial disorders, because there is a popular belief that there is no successful treatment in mitochondrial disorders. Would you comment on this?
Yeah, this is the biggest mistake still circulating around scientific and medical community. Mitochondrial diseases are completely so heterogeneous, are so complicated to manage and recognize, and most of the time it's difficult to have a real treatment for them. But first of all, we do have symptomatic treatment to manage the seizures, to manage cardiomyopathy, to manage diabetes, also to have primary prevention in organs, because you know, having the diagnosis of mitochondrial disease, sometimes you may expect the involvement of another so far asymptomatic organ, and you can plan a primary prevention. The best example is the pacemaker or ICD to prevent sudden death in multiple mitochondrial patients. So besides the symptomatic treatment, we now have at least three therapies already in the market or that are coming in the market. So the first example is the omaveloxolone for Friedreich ataxia. Friedreich ataxia is a mitochondrial disease. The protein is within the mitochondria. the protein when it doesn't work impair mitochondrial respiration, ATP production. So we now have a symptomatic molecular therapy that is able to partially restore mitochondrial function in this selected mitochondrial disorder, which is Friedreich ataxia. And then we have the dossier now is under investigation at the EMA, the nucleoside treatment for TK2 deficiency. This is another dramatic disease that was causing either SMA-like phenotypes at birth or severe myopathic floppy infant syndromes leading to death in few months, frequently these children. Now we have this opportunity to provide nucleoside, restore the mitochondrial DNA biosynthesis in these patients. So there are already multiple studies published, and there are a lot of patients everywhere in the US, in Europe, under compassionate use of nucleoside supplementation that not only are doing well, they're playing, you know, football, they swim, they dance, and, you know, they were used to die, these kids. So hopefully this new treatment will be available soon. And then another good example that I was mentioning is the elamipretide in Bartter syndrome and maybe in mitochondrial myopathy. So elamipretide is another very interesting molecule that is really the main focus because it binds cardiolipin into the mitochondrial membrane. So it is very theoretically useful in Bartter syndrome, where we have cardiolipin alteration in the mitochondria, and these kids were dying for a severe cardiomyopathy. And there are already a couple of clinical trials that provide good evidence that elamipretide can work on Bartter. And so now the dossier is under the FDA investigation. And then we do not have to forget about the LHON, the Leber optic neuropathy, where then we have already a treatment, which is idebenone, but we also have gene therapy. I mean, there is a huge debate around gene therapy on LHON, but most likely it will work. We need to wait a few more, I guess, years, but we will have also gene therapy here. So mitochondrial diseases are really treatable with symptomatic treatment, primary prevention, and at least four mitochondrial disorders we have or will have in the next months specific treatment.
Okay, so let's summarize the key points in here. Professor Mancuso, please.
Yeah, I think in this podcast, we have provided real good evidence that our field of rare diseases, rare neurological disorders, is really changing fast. We have concrete opportunities for our patients. We can provide support to our children. We can expect in the next few years more and more therapies coming out on the market. So it's a very exciting moment for our community. So I'm pretty sure a lot of young investigators, young neurologists, young neuropediatricians after this podcast will fall in love with our field on rare neurological disease, because we are now really going to treat this patient. We are going to have success. We are going to share our happiness with kids, with families, with patients. So it's an exciting moment. So I'm super happy of this 2025. Looking forward for more and more discoveries and therapies in the next couple of years.
Yes, thank you. You're right. It's a really fascinating field. So thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure too. Thank you.
Thank you very much and goodbye.
This has been EANcast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.